At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Jordi, Messi, Jordi, el Santo Messi!
Messi Uncle, Ricky Major League en la Ciudad del Sol. Here in Miami, we know who's el campeón. Leo my team, yeah. Suárez on the field, Alex wedding day team. Con mis fechas un win, the trio of everything, muchachos. Las familias escuchan los barrios. Esta camiseta pinky la llevan todos los guachos. Los rookies quedan sin comentarios. Messi ambetea, tiki taki gol. El estadio Chase bañado en lloro y sudor. Aquí se ama y se respeta el balón. Florida es tu casa, acostúmbrate al calor. Estate listo pa' Messi Anco. Estate listo pa' Messi Anco.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another special live edition of Messi & Co., where we will be doing our official Inter Miami versus Pumas preview for the final match of the group stages of League's Cup. Lots to talk about. I'm joined here, as always, with my incredible co-host, Gian, but also Matt is joining. He's dealing with a couple technical difficulties, but he'll be on any second, so it'll be the whole gang. So don't worry, we'll all be here. I'm super excited to talk. Obviously, we did an episode yesterday, so hasn't been that long, but in the space of the 24 hours, a lot has happened. And just like that, look, as I said it, here he is,
yeah.
Our other most important co-host, Matt. What's up, Matt?
I appreciate you guys. Sorry for the delay.
No worries.
Freshly showered.
Yeah, looking freshly clean. Showered. Looking clean, nice. Freshly paint. Showered.
So you know there was too. A good reason. There was a good reason for the tardiness. I had to look good.
Yeah, I was about to say. Look at us right now. Is your shirt pink, Gian?
Mine is pink. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look at us. We're in pink, black, pink. Like we're right now, like really representing Inter Miami.
Hell yeah.
But already one of our OGs, Black Story. Hola, mi gente. How's it going? Ace Lionel saying Matt looking like Suarez each time he's on. Look, Suarez is not a bad looking guy. It's not can't hurt. Not bad.
I'll remember that.
You know, again, excited to be here doing this preview. There's been a lot that's happened, obviously, since the three of us were together. I was just saying, me and Gian had a quick sync yesterday to go over, obviously, all the controversy, injuries and stuff that were taking place. And what we want to do before we get into the rest of the show and just, you know, the normal thing, is start with the fact that obviously Leagues Cup and CONCACAF have revoked the red card suspension of Maxi Falcón, meaning he'll be available to play tomorrow, which is super important. And we're going to talk about, but before that, wanted to get your perspective, because I'm sure you heard what we said yesterday. You've seen the tweets, you've seen the comments. You yourself are a referee. You know the rules better than anyone. Just wanted to know what your overall take was and, you know, how the decision has gone moving forward. And then, you know, we can move on from it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So it's very nitpicky, right? Because when you look at it, if like you really sit down, and as referees, you sit down, you read the laws of the game, and then you look at footage and you try to apply that into real life scenarios, like word for word, like textbook definition, you can definitely argue that it's a red card, like because you have to look at the considerations, direction of play, the number of defenders around the player, distance between the foul and the goal. You look at all that, but then you don't referee the game black and white, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if anybody is going to understand what I'm trying to say here, but you don't referee a game black and white just because it says, just because it says it in the rule book, that doesn't mean you take it verbatim into the game, because that's just not how that works. That's not how soccer works. That's not how refereeing or officiating in general works. So to get straight to it, I think it was a horrible decision. I genuinely I think it was a horrible decision, and wow, that's not me being biased.
And you're usually very, I would say, pro ref more than
I'm
us.
I'm very so pro ref. I always try to defend the refs.
Do it. So this, I think that's a strong.
I always hate the refs, so it's good to have both sides of this.
Yeah. So keep going though.
But no, look, I'm very pro ref. I am a referee. I have a lot of friends who are referees, and I have a lot of respect for the profession. So, but I think that it's a very difficult job that's very underappreciated, and there's a shortage of referees in everywhere, in all levels of the game. But that decision was very, very bad, because it was first very soft. And we all know this. It was very soft. I think it was just uncalled for the timing, of the game. I think it was the 10th minute.
Seventh minute
of the game.
Falcon, and it wasn't like an egregious, like so obvious.
It wasn't right. Like Falcon literally just put his body in front of the forward to slow him down. And then the Necaxa player just took advantage of it, which props to him. He got the call.
It was a slight tug on the shirt.
It was
Matt.
A slight and, tug and on the
if
shirt.
You're going to call that consistently, then it's, every corner kick is a penalty. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous.
Like, it's very... It was just bad. It was very, very bad. And that could have definitely ended very badly for Inter Miami as the game went on. I mean, like, we looked pretty rough until they went a man down.
Right.
Which we got lucky with.
I think really quickly, though, one, I agree with you. And I just want your perspective on, like, let's just say, you know, it was a soft call. And, you know, in the moment, everything is happening at such a fast pace. So understood, especially in recent years, a lot of times the referee will have the benefit of the doubt of being like, I'm seeing what I'm seeing in real time. It's a split second. It's a goal scoring opportunity. I can't see the specifics. So I'm saying, you know, I'm making the decision, even if it's wrong. What I think is so egregious about it, and what we said, because referees make mistakes, the reason for what we've developed in terms of technology is VAR to check this and to verify the validity. And if in that split second with the referee running, you know, 50 yards, having it's a box to box play, being able to see it. And the fact that it didn't go to VAR or VAR didn't deem enough of a noticeable mistake. That is, to me, what is really the weird and egregious part of it.
That definitely threw me off, because obviously in a situation like that, the VAR automatically checks it. Like, everybody, all the referees in the booth, they're checking it as everybody waits and delays and whatnot. And what really threw me off is them not recommending a review to the center official.
Not recommending, because, right.
Like, how they, so that meant that those guys in the booth, they were like, no, you know what? Like, you were 100% right. There was no reason for you to take another look. Like, there was no possible way you could have got that wrong. I'm like, that's just not, that shouldn't True. Be the case. That shouldn't be the case regardless, because maybe it looked fine in person, live in the moment, which totally makes sense. But you need, if you would have taken a second look at that, I 100% guarantee you that he probably would have changed his mind. And I think CONCACAF revoking the red card further, like, proves and backs our thinking and anger of the whole situation, because even CONCACAF were like, you know what, that's not what a red card, let's revoke it. So no, what else? What were you going to say?
The last point on this, because I know we have a lot of other things to talk about, is your opinion on just the integrity aspect of it, of the Mexican being a fully Mexican officiating crew. Look, by the way, people gave examples of this, and I think it's fair and to mention as well, and Mascherano cleared up as well. For example, in the Premier League, mm-hmm. there are English referees. In La mm-hmm. Liga, there are Spanish referees. In MLS, there are et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when you're playing a multinational and international competition, you mm-hmm. want to choose referees that are not from either nation. That is, it, you know, that is the point. Like in a regular, like Manchester United versus Liverpool, a British referee, that's, you know, that's not yeah. what people are upset about. So just, I'd say my last question to you was, you know, the overall integrity and optics of it, and has CONCACAF kind of, and I want you to, Gian, to answer this as well after, if you don't mind, just after, you know, knowing that we have the revoking statement, he's back in, have they rectified the situation enough? Do we think we all move on? Do we think there will be more consequences? And did you just find it weird?
I find it like horrible. I think it's just very
Matt's gonna protest at the referee. Like,
no, but it's like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you can't put not just a Mexican referee, but you can't put a Mexican crew. The whole crew was Mexican. And obviously nothing against Mexican people.
No, but no, it's of like course. It's you'd say the same thing if it was reversed, if it was
yes,
an American
you
crew.
Can't,
or even an Argentinian crew, everyone would be like, oh no, they're being pro Messi. Like,
exactly.
You need you to avoid those
exactly.
situations.
You need to completely avoid those situations.
Which they easily
entirely.
Could have done.
Easily
plenty
could have
of
done
other
it.
Options in
bring CONCACAF. In somebody from Costa Rica. You literally there's like what 41, 42 countries in CONCACAF, and you had to choose a Mexican referee to officiate the game. I think it's a very, very questionable decision. It questions the integrity of the game, because now this speculation wouldn't be like existing if there was a Mexican referee. Because if it was somebody from Costa Rica or like Guatemala or Canada even, nobody would be saying, oh, because yeah. the referee was in favor of one over the other. But now that the crew is fully Mexican and they have this red card overturned, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing on everybody's end, on the referee's end, on CONCACAF's end. Like, it's really, 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 really embarrassing. So they need to fix that moving forward. And they need to fix that moving forward, because that can't be in continental competitions.
Right.
That sort of thing needs to be completely, completely avoided.
Yep.
Yeah, not to get too into it, just because we already took a lot of time on, especially in the last episode, I think. Yeah, this card being rescinded just adds fuel to the fire, mm-hmm. and it adds a little bit of legitimacy to what Mascherano said. And it's not about whether he was Mexican or the referees were Mexican or American or any other nationality. Mm-hmm. It has to do with they were a nationality of one of the teams.
Like,
that
it
was
should
there.
Not have happened in the first place.
And that
place.
Should never happen, because
right.
even if referees – I don't really like to, because obviously I was joking about hating referees. I don't before that gets put out everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't hate referees.
That context.
That was a joke. But I don't like to think that referees come in with bias, but let's be real as well. There have been instances in football where there are issues with referees. Referees are human beings, just like everybody else, and things can happen. And I think that when you have a sport where you want there to be integrity in the sport, you want there to be transparency, and you want to take away any ounce of bias, you just have to be proactive about it and make sure that you take out any inkling that might happen. Because again, if this was another referee from another nationality, Mascherano's not talking about it, they're pissed, but this whole issue doesn't come about. So at the end of the day, good for the red card being taken away.
Agreed. It was rescinded, the right decision was made. Hopefully we move forward, and hopefully for the rest of the tournament, CONCACAF now has taken in that aspect into consideration and do what we all want, which is to continue to grow the legitimacy and the excitement of the League's Cup. Because even, you know, including the mess of what happened in that last match, I will say I've been watching a lot of the League's Cup matches when I can, and I think there's been incredible intensity and great play in every match. Obviously, they're all taking place in America. That's something that's a future state thing. But I will say, for like what it is, and it's third year, right, of being there, the teams are playing hard, and the energy is good, the competitiveness is there, and I've been really enjoying it. So I hope moving forward we continue to see you know, those improvements being made. And luckily,
I'd just like to say before we continue, I'd just like to say that we all have different views of this tournament. I just wanted to be clear. I don't like it. I don't think it should exist, and I think it's a money grab. I'll just say that. And I know
it is a money grab, but I'm happy that they're playing.
I think it's stupid. It shouldn't exist. Just want to put my point of view out there.
But then wouldn't you say that about that, like the Carabao Cup or like the Super Cup, like the FA Cup? They're all fake. There's no reason for any of them. I think it's
adding more context to it is why I think it's stupid, because I think that you have a legitimate cup in the US Open Cup and you throw that out the door to bring in something that has no legitimacy, no historic value, no value and no intrinsic value to the culture of football. When have you seen one league versus another league in a tournament? We have that already, and it's called the Champions Cup. That's where you have multiple leagues playing in one cup. So there's a lot of things, and I can literally take an entire episode to talk about how stupid the tournament is and how it shouldn't exist. But at the end of the day, I love football. I love Inter Miami, so I'm going to root for them. And I obviously, if there's a match on, I enjoy it. I'm not going to pretend I'm there sitting, you know, grumpy and pissed. Like, I can't believe I'm watching this. I'll enjoy it. But I think that this tournament is existing while another one has been thrown to the ground that has a lot, or thrown away that has a lot more legitimacy.
I think we should do an episode on it, because the only thing I counter with is that I don't think the U.S. Open Cup did a very good job of trying to improve its legitimacy and make it what is, like, this is the comment is exactly this.
Well, do you have?
We're looking at England. The FA Cup is the U.S. Open Cup, and the U.S. Open Cup should be what the FA Cup is. That's the point of it, and it should be the tournament of choice. But the Carabao Cup was completely made for money from literally, I think it's the brand, Carabao is a brand.
The U.S. Open Cup was established in 1914, so I don't think it needs to add or work towards legitimacy. I think it has its legitimacy. It's been around for over 100 years. So that in of itself is the legitimacy.
It didn't provide enough value to MLS participants.
Value. That's what value is to MLS. But anyways,
is the U.S. Open? I have a question. And this is me genuinely asking: if you win the U.S. Open Cup, does that mean you automatically qualify for the CONCACAF Champions Cup?
I'm not sure.
I will tell you, for in England and in Spain, part of those two tournaments, the FA Cup,
Open Cup receives $600,000 in prize money and a berth to the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and their name engraved in the Doer Challenge Trophy. Then the runner-up receives $250,000, and it goes to the highest advancing team from whatever. Anyways, it's long. But yes, to answer your question, they do.
So then the thing is, they didn't do a good enough. The MLS didn't do a good enough job as the governing body of making the U.S. Open the priority, and that's a failure on their part, because in England, the FA, the Football Association, makes the FA Cup the priority. In La Liga, Supercopa, something like that, right? Like, they make that the priority.
Well, MLS is run as a business. It's not run as a football culture
thing. And that is why.
When they saw the money in Mexico, they're like, okay, we can make a lot more money, including the Mexican League. We can make a lot more from the rights, from the television, from all of that. And that's something that the U.S. Open didn't provide, other than the actual legitimacy and importance that comes with history in football.
Yeah, no, and I think that'd be a great episode to talk about. What are some things that the MLS and the, you know, CONCACAF governing body can do to improve the, you know, both of those tournaments? Because in the end, what you do want, though, is you want teams to have opportunities outside of just winning the cup to be able to make it into the international tournaments, right? Like, you want to have multiple ways to get into the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Just like in Europe, there are multiple ways to get into the Champions League. It's not just the top four, right? Like, there are multiple opportunities through tournaments, and that's what makes football exciting all year round. And that's what they need to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
So we'll move on, but a great point, and definitely a really great topic. So now that we've said that, Copa del Rey, that's what the Spanish FA Cup version is, right? My mistake. For really quickly, before we get into the game and the preview, and this is a great comment that I'm going to say because it ties in perfectly. A really quick update on Messi, because obviously he's not playing tomorrow. We talked about what the official statement was from Inter Miami yesterday a little bit. And what we pointed out, which I think has been proven to be even more true based on Javier Mascherano's comments in today's press conference, it's minor. No strain, no ligament damage. Something that he will hopefully, you know, be able to recover from quickly. And it was done for all intents and purposes precautionary and because he felt discomfort and didn't want to chance it. And so Mascherano today says, we don't give a timetable for Messi because Messi likes to recover quickly, which I thought was a fun thing to say. And I appreciate it because we don't get a lot of transparency with those kind of things, but we do all know Messi, and Mascherano knows him better than anyone. He does not like to not play if he can. And so I think right now the general idea is that he will not play tomorrow and he will not play Sunday for sure against Orlando. Those two games guaranteed he's not playing. Tomorrow, we're going to obviously talk about this, how do we get ourselves to the quarterfinals. I think the plan is, if all goes well, he will be back either for that LA Galaxy game the following week, and if not, for the next round of the League's Cup, which I believe is on the 19th. So all of that to say, it's looking like somewhere between a 2 to 3 week timetable, which I think we're all, best case scenario.
That's expected.
Right.
But we don't, the MLS games don't get moved if we go through?
No, because it's Wednesday. Because so for that week, it's Saturday. I think maybe the final gets moved, I think. But the quarter and semis are on Wednesdays. So it keeps.
Well, right now, there's no games anyway for two weeks after this.
Right.
The next, the quarterfinals start on the 19th.
Wow. So right.
2 weeks off.
And Inter Miami has a game the 16th. So I think they have a game that Saturday. And then it would be Tuesday or Wednesday. It'd be like a regular, like a midweek match.
Right.
I think when it gets closer, like when you're in semi and final, I think they probably move if necessary. Gotcha. But for now, it doesn't compete with the schedule as is. And like, like Leon said, a good time as it works out in terms of it's a 2 week break for League's Cup. So that's that's the update on Messi. I'm glad it's minor. He's been playing a crap ton of minutes. He's like we've said, yeah. He's gotten 16 goal contributions in 7 games. Not 36 for the year. Plays 90 minutes every chance he gets. These things happen. Glad it's minor, and we move forward with what we have available. And so let's talk about what we have available. This is a comment from Noel Gutierrez that I think is a great segue. Can we shift to Rodrigo De Paul and how he really stepped up in place of Messi, how he moved the ball up when he was tired to create plays? Now, Rodrigo De Paul has been, signed since early last week. And in the two competitions or the two games he's been available for, he has played 90 minutes in both of them and it has had a huge impact. And so, first and foremost, what a player to be able to, with no training sessions, even though he just played with Atletico Madrid, it's not like he had 6 months off of football. It was a month, but still, to not have any play with the team, not have the chemistry with all of the players, knowing the formations, the tactics. Obviously, when you're in the game itself, and number one, you have a red card, and then 3 minutes later, the best player of all time has to sub out, that changes whatever game plan you had prepared. So the fact that he was able to adjust in his second match for the team and lead to that game, to the tying assist and scoring a penalty. What are we thinking about him? Cause it's pretty mind blowing.
I do want to go first, Gian, because you're the kind of the La Liga expert, so you could talk about De Paul. Or do you want me to go first as the Argentinian expert?
I feel like you're our official De Paul correspondent, but I'll follow through. Go ahead.
No, it's part of us to deal. Okay. Listen, I think I still can't believe, genuinely, that we could bring somebody in like De Paul. Like, when I thought it was going to happen, I don't want to be like a broken record, but like, he's literally 31.
Yeah.
And
in his prime, arguably.
He's still in his prime. He's still in his prime years. He spent 4 years at Atletico Madrid. And now he's at MLS.
Three trophies in a row with Argentina.
He's one of the better players, starting player in the Argentinian national team. Like this guy is a monster on the field. And you just hate to face against him. You love to play with him and you hate to face against him. And he's showing, like, he only played two games in Miami, and he's just really showing his experience. He's showing his prime, you know, form. And he just shows, like, how he doesn't need that much time to adapt to life with a new team, because he already is freaking so good. And him connecting with Bussi, him connecting with Suarez, him connecting with even the rest of the team is just making
Jordi Alba with the header, yeah.
Yeah, Jordi Alba with or linking with Jordi Alba for that assist. And and it's only two games. I can only imagine what the rest of the season is going to look like. And I'm so glad that we could have somebody like him. I'm still waiting to get the jersey. I really need it.
Gian?
Yeah, I just see Matt kind of paused it in the middle. It looked like he was going to keep talking, and then he threw me off there.
Yeah, no, because I'm like, what? Like, I'm going to talk forever.
Rodrigo de Paul.
Completely lost signal in the middle of that sentence. That was crazy. No, obviously, I mean, we all know Rodrigo de Paul, and Matt did a great job of talking about him. We talked about him before he got here, so we know a lot of him. El motorcito, the motor behind the team, and I think it's going to be even more evident now with no Messi coming up, how much this Inter Miami team is going to depend on Rodrigo de Paul. We're going to see Rodrigo de Paul that's going to play, and I might be getting ahead of myself here, so I won't get to it because we're going to talk about the game, but we're going to see a Rodrigo de Paul that is going to play higher up. The team is going to need him to be a bigger part of the attack. He's going to be the one that runs basically everything for the team. And I think he's up to the task. He played a different role in Atletico Madrid. I think he was a little more back, but when he went to
was he five on Atletico Madrid or seven?
Well, kind of like he's box to box. He's just
I meant the number on his jersey.
I think he was,
but I think we're gonna see him a lot higher up, and I'm kind of excited to talk about what to expect this Pumas game, talk about the lineups, because I have some idea for some lineups what he's gonna look like. But you know,
the main playmaker, I'm going to show.
Yeah, but the main playmaker obviously is not there with Messi. Suarez is not a playmaker, even though he's been used to facilitate a bit. Velasco Segovia has some playmaking abilities, but let me tell you that you're going to see Rodrigo de Paul on full display like you haven't seen him in his short couple of games. If you thought you've seen a lot, like, just wait till next game from him. It's going to be outstanding.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, those first two matches, think about it. First match, no team training, 90 minutes. In an incredibly intense first match, second game, all of those problems we just said. So now at the third, I mean, without Messi, I would still say, you know, you don't get the very best out of anyone because he's the best, but we're going to see, I agree, someone who's going to try and control the game. Lineups, right before we talk about lineups. And I think also this is another thing we should do a separate episode on. We have a lot of episodes to do. There's just so much good stuff. I think this is a really good point to say, and something I pointed out on our Twitter account today. Right now, you're really, I think, seeing a pivotal moment for MLS this season, because Rodrigo de Paul, 31 years old, coming, amazing. Heung-min Song, and I am a Tottenham fan, so I may feel differently than others in a certain way. Let me tell you something right now. What a player and what a superstar. You want to talk about reach? He is the most popular man in Asia by like 100 miles, maybe BTS more popular. But besides that, he is so popular. And England too, like, just, you know, all of Europe, Asia, Africa, etc. Because they play in the Africa and the Asian Cup. You know, Heung-min Song is a quality player and a quality superstar. His play has gone a little down in the last 2 years. But that's as a starter for, you know, a team that won the Europa League, a Premier League giant, you know. So it's he's 33 and still has a lot left to give. So LAFC grabbing him is great for the league, both on the field and off the field, because he's going to bring a lot of revenue, a lot of excitement, and a lot of new fans. I'd say for Thomas Muller, something similar, you know, a little past his prime, but Thomas Muller, same thing. Huge pedigree, huge experience, a lot of fans who are going to be excited to see him play.
I do have an opinion on this, and it varies a little different from I think you, Ash. I think that...
How shocking.
I think that it's like the episode of me versus Ash.
You should have seen. I was telling them yesterday about our text exchange, Matt, and like we were about to start like fighting each other in a UFC ring.
So I think that there's obviously a Messi effect. I just see it a little different. Well, maybe a little differently. I think that the Messi effect for me, when you talk about players like Song, players like Mueller, yeah, and maybe some of the older guys above the age of 30, with the exception of Rodrigo De Paul, because the only reason De Paul is here is because Messi's here. But I wouldn't call it the Messi effect in that he felt like it's okay because Messi is here. No, he came to play with his friend. Whether his friend was in Saudi Arabia or playing in Argentina, he wanted to play with his friend, right, before his career is over. So that there's an exception. But when you talk about Mueller, we talk about Song, those are guys that to me are, I think, I don't know how much of the Messi effect really plays into that. You had guys like Pirlo, Kaká, Beckham, Ibrahimovic, other guys. You know, this isn't the first time that players are coming over after the age of 30. For me, the Messi effect is even more apparent in the younger players. That's where I see it, where he's making it more acceptable to come at a younger age. Players that would have otherwise have wanted to go play in Mexico, have wanted to go play in Brazil, in Argentina, with the hopes of making it to Europe eventually, I think those are the players that are having a bigger effect, that Messi's having a bigger effect on, because they're coming here to MLS knowing that now this can be the new gateway to make their dreams come true and play in Europe. I mean, a perfect example, like Diego Gomez. Like Diego, right, Gomez was a guy that was going to go to Brighton and probably already knew about Brighton and other offers from the Premier League, but was like, you know, I'm going to come in and play in MLS and I can still make that dream come true without having to go to Liga MX or, you know, other places. So for me, there is a Messi effect, but I think it's more geared towards the younger class, which I think is even more important and more impactful for MLS. That you want it to be okay to come at a young age. The old guys are going to come. Like, that's always been a part of
it. Yeah, but see, Heung-min Son, though, I disagree, because Heung-min Son is 33, but I'll tell you what, he'd start for 10 other Premier League teams. He'd get triple the amount of money in Saudi Arabia. He could play for Seoul. He could play for and make triple the amount of money in Asia. I think the only counter I would say is, I think you're right in the main idea, which is that it is that we're seeing younger and that is helping. And that's growing the infrastructure of MLS. But why I say it's a Messi effect and why I say it's a drip down is that Messi is bringing the global audience to this in a way that Saudi Arabia and other leagues are not. And so people are watching MLS at a much higher level. And so some of those other players, I think, feel that, one, the competitiveness of the matches in the league is rising. It's not just Inter Miami have 90 points and everyone else has 40. Like, I'd say it's more competitive than like the Bundesliga, where it's, you know, always Bayern Munich or Dortmund. You know, there is real competition, and now you are seeing these bigger players going to different parts of the country, different parts of different teams at different levels. It's not the main thing, but I just think it's part of the trickle down, is that the rising tides raise all ships, and the league itself is improving. So you're seeing, as opposed to in the past where you're right, there were plenty of stars who came to MLS to finish their career. I think now there's just a step added where they're coming to the MLS in the twilight of their career, but there's more, I think, excitement, intensity, and opportunity to still play at a high level competitively and with a lot of people watching. So just, yeah, it's adding, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just,
and I agree with what Tony's saying. I think that Inter Miami's front office, them, yeah, spending the amount of money that they are on transfers and being as dreaming as big as they are, has definitely had an impact as well on other teams. And we're, yeah, seeing other teams want to do that as well.
Transfer record has now been broken consecutively, just to your point. people are trying to spend more money. So I think it's a great discussion. I think you're also right that the priority is the young people getting more opportunity. But I just think it's great that we're seeing it across offense. Like, I'm excited that now I will be able to watch Son play more and maybe in person. And that's something that I, you know, was harder. So super excited about that. All right. Now, another thing that we're super going to get along about, me and Gian, is about the lineups for tomorrow.
Oh,
and
I disagree. I disagree with Ashley. I'm just kidding.
I haven't even introduced the topic.
I disagree. I have not even introduced the topic.
Also, Matt, did you have anything you want to say specifically about Son or any of that, or do you, you know?
No, you guys hit all points. I didn't want to be repetitive.
Also, just is that mate or is that just regular?
This is regular water. I'm being regular today.
You're yet to pull out the mate in the middle of an episode. I've been waiting for that moment. I've done it once.
I've done it once before, like way back. I think it was way back when, like one of the first ones, but I got to do it again. I just never have it ready. They're probably drinking it downstairs, and like, our parents are probably drinking it downstairs.
Okay. All right. Well, then, so a separate episode, maybe one day, because it's a cool topic. But let's talk about tomorrow. So Inter Miami had, after, you know, not getting all 3 points, getting 2 points, which is still positive, obviously.
Yeah.
Not getting all 3 points. I think, though, they have seen a favorable results as it relates to other MLS teams in their second group phase matches, which has put us in a position right now where we are, I think, you know, four teams from MLS make it. We're right now in third, meaning we control our destiny in the sense that if we win tomorrow, 100% we make it. If it goes to penalties, other things, still a high chance and a good chance that we will make it. But then there are some things that become out of our control, right? Okay. But the idea, and I think the ability that you do control your destiny when and you're in, is a good position to be in, right? Knowing now we're now going to have an intense game that is either make or break. This game, like we've said, is not going to be with Lionel Messi in it, which means there's got to be a lot of changes. Let's talk about what some of them may be. Okay, and we're going to use the comments to guide us, and we comment based on the comment on what they say. Here's the first one from, like I said, the OG Black Story. I hope Masha tries to use DePaul at right midfield instead of a useless Allende and double pivot Boussy and Bright. Did I start with this because I agree? No, I'm not biased. I will say, this is what I'll say, and this was part of, you know, what our disagreement was, is that at this point, and part of it is moot now because since Messi's not playing, you're going to need as much attack as you can. But I think Allende has gotten a longer leash than he probably should have. And I think, you know, with Fafa and even a Kramaski, like, and a moving a DePaul up, or, you know, switching a couple things around, moving Segovia higher up, I think there have been more opportunities than just saying direct swap for Allende to Fafa that team could have tried and that I'd like to see tried, because I think Allende, like every other player, if you're not producing, you have to be rotated. Luis Suarez has missed a lot of good chances and has taken a big downward spiral. There's no denying. But he is still creating plays and assists all game. And whether you think that's enough to keep him on, totally different discussion. My point and my thinking is that he is still part of goals that are being scored. Allende, in my opinion, has not been, because he has not had a good enough first touch, create, or whatever. He's making good runs and things, but there's no production coming out of it. Luis Suarez is fluffing up a 3-foot goal, but he creates 4 assists. You know what I mean? So it's like there's things to measure. And then the second part of this, which is really the more important part of this, because I think Yande is playing tomorrow. I really would like to live in a world, and I said it yesterday, where Yannick Bright could start in this team somewhere. Because I'm in the American broadcast, I had said,
hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
During the match, with the last match with Necaxa, I would say in the 30 minutes Yannick Bright played, he was mentioned by the commentators 15 times for how good he was. Mm-hmm. Just they said it over and over again. There he is again. There he is again. Yannick Bright, 1 year out, like being in the perfect position, making the getting the perfect steal, you know, denying an opportunity for Necaxa to get a shot off, etc. He is so good and valuable that how and can we find a way to be able to have Busquets, Bright, and DePaul on the field at the same time? Because I think it's just such a disservice to Yannick Bright and his talent. So before we get to other formations and stuff, I'm curious on those two points. You know, one, Allende, your thoughts on his play, and if maybe there just isn't a solution B that's good enough, and the possibility or you know, willingness to try and fit Bright into a team that you normally wouldn't. So, Gian, let's start with you.
Well, surprisingly, I disagree.
Okay. Thank God. I thought you were about to say you agreed with me, and I'd be like, okay, I have to go.
As much as I like Bright, I don't think he's going to start. I think that that's already kind of been proven, that Mascherano leans towards Redondo, and he feels like Redondo can go more time than Yannick Bright does. Feels like Yannick Bright can never put in a full 90, and he'll plug in Yannick Bright usually if Redondo isn't available or if Redondo needs to come out or if something has to change in the game tactics. But I think it's going to be Redondo and Bright as a double pivot. And I think as far as Allende is concerned, I think Allende is going to start. Allende has proven that he can make runs into space, that he can create opportunities for himself. The only thing he's missing is the goal. And I think that Mascherano's going to stick with his guns and hope that he can finally score and finally finishes those chances. Because I think as a coach, you want your attacker, because Suarez isn't an attacker. He's not used as an attacker.
Perfect time that you said that.
Suarez right now is on a 9-game goalless streak. He hasn't scored in 9 games. He has 3 assists in those 9 games. And I don't know. Like, it's difficult because I don't think that's necessarily what you want out of your forward. Like, you want your forward to score. Like, I'm not excited that he has 3 assists in 9 games and 0 goals. I want him to score. And part of that is Manche. The other part is him. There are opportunities that he has where he can shoot on goal and he tries to force a pass in. But I still think Allende is going to start. And I think I really think our number 10 tomorrow is going to be the ball. And we're going to see the type of number 10 that we usually have on the field, with one that's roaming around and plays free. That's what I think is going to happen tomorrow. I'd like to get into some of the tactics, but we can talk about that in a little bit. But that's where I see two pivots, a double pivot, Busquets and Redondo, and then the ball as a free floating 10 tomorrow.
Redondo over Bright?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's happening tomorrow. 100%.
Redondo, not Busquets. Redondo, you're saying, over Bright.
No, I'm saying it's going to be Busquets and Redondo.
Yeah,
double pivots.
Okay,
And De Paul isn't going to be he's not going to be next to Busquets. He's going to be a free roaming 10.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Matt, before we move on, because there are some, I think, good comments about formation ideas and lineups. So what are your thoughts on just that?
There's going to be very minimal changes to what from last time out. Like essentially what we've seen in the second half is essentially what we're going to see tomorrow. Like you said, with the ball playing higher in a more advanced role, roaming playmaker, we're still going to see Ashen down the field. We're going to be seeing Redondo again. We're going to keep seeing Busi, and everything is going to be almost the same. It's just the only real difference now, I think, is seeing how Rodrigo De Paul will play higher up with more freedom, playing as that 10, playing in that or fulfilling somewhat that Messi type of role. And trying to piggyback off of what Gian said about Suarez, yes, and what a lot of the people in the comments are saying, like Ace Leoned, we need our striker to score goals. I do agree with that. But I also think that with what Suarez is doing, I think the Suarez hate is too high for what he's doing. I definitely think he could be doing a little more with scoring goals and et cetera. But I also think like that's also not completely his fault. I think like with the role that he's given, with Mascherano giving him a specific role to play on this team, he's fulfilling that to an extent. He's giving good performances. We have to look at players like how you said, Ashley, at Tadeo Allende, who's been mid and below mid for a while. For a long time, and you said it best when you said he has a, what is it, a long leash, or what is it, too loose of
he has too long of a leash.
That is probably the best possible way that you could put it. But unfortunately, I don't think we'll see a change in that, and that's just because of Mascherano trying to keep it as consistent as possible with his personnel and with his tactics. So
I think consistency is a fair point in terms of, especially when you're in a tournament. Maybe you're right, but then this would be my only question.
Yeah.
Like, in your both opinions, why do you think there hasn't been, and now circumstantial, take that out of the equation, right? If all things were as said, we wouldn't see a change of Allende. So my question is specifically with Fafa and Allende, because if we were to keep everything else consistent, that would be your direct swap, right? Or you know, having Segovia or whatever, like that would be
that's the only swap you can make.
Why do you think Fafa has not had that? And it's like kind of a double-ended sword where I'm saying, why is Allende have such a long leash and Fafa such a short? Because like it's the same leash, right? So it's like who's getting the better majority of it? And after not one, not two, like the last four or five matches, consistently Allende is missing. He's missing his opportunities and chances, and it's not. And he's having really bad first touches. It's not one match. It's not two. It's been multiple. So why do we think that is?
It's probably like for Allende, I think it's a lack of confidence, or it's a lack of. It's all mental, I think, with Allende, because it's all with. I think I think he has the technical ability to be better. I think he's technically a good player, but I think sometimes he gets in his own head, and he'll like second guess things, or like he'll get maybe nervous. I don't know. That's looking from the outside.
Has any validity, really quick? I'm wondering.
Oh, you're telling me that Fafa doesn't drink mate. You can't say. I am so convinced.
He actually does.
Convinced that Fafa.
First of all, I would say he's probably one of the most Hispanic people on our team.
Yes.
I think Fafa is half Argentinian. In an extreme opinion, but less of why Allende isn't playing well. Why isn't Fafa getting the opportunities? Do you think?
It's maybe trust. I think this is obviously, this is all speculation. But I believe that maybe Mascherano has lost a little bit of trust in Fafa when it comes to playing a full 90 or for the majority of a game.
True, he did have a hamstring injury in the first match.
He did miss out for a couple of months. Ashinda's been getting, you know, he was in and out earlier, but now his stretch has gotten worse. But I don't know. It just could be trust. Maybe not the players don't trust him. Sometimes like Fafa will make runs. I remember in certain games, I think it was like last month or so, like Fafa would make runs and then like Messi or whoever would have the ball would just turn around and go the other way. So I don't know. It could be a trust thing. And maybe he doesn't, maybe Fafa or maybe Mascherano doesn't trust Fafa to be that guy in those moments. I don't know what Gian thinks.
I think there's different components to it that all make sense to me, at least. And I think one is Mascherano doesn't like to experiment. Mascherano likes to go with what he feels familiar with, what he's already built trust in. Yeah. And while Allende isn't scoring, he's proved to get into the positions that Mascherano wants him to get into and get into those scoring opportunities. And Mascherano's like, I just need one to fall and he's doing what I need him to do. He's missing that one key component, which is obviously very important. But I think that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons. I think the other reason is if Allende's sole purpose was to just attack, then I think there's a bigger reasoning to just switch him out with Fafa. But Allende doesn't only attack. He's a vital part of the midfield and coming back. And I don't think that he feels that he gets that same out of Fafa. Fafa, I think, is a lot more of an attacking player, but he's brittle. He's skinny. He's not, I don't want to say weak, but he's not as strong body-wise as and forceful. And I think he's more explosive, though,
but they all balance out.
But explosive in it, that's why I said if Allende's sole purpose was to just attack, then I think there's more of a possibility for Fafa to come in and do that. For example, let's say Suarez wasn't there and it was just Allende that was our center forward, then maybe Fafa would get some more opportunities. But because Allende has other roles and responsibilities he has, I feel like he doesn't feel like Fafa can fulfill those. And then lastly, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. We don't know what happened. We don't know what happens in practice. Remember, a lot of times what happens and what we see on the field develops from what is seen in practice and how other players gel and that sort of thing. So there's different reasons that I could see it. Now, my opinion, do I think he deserves an opportunity? 100%. Do I think he deserves more minutes? 100%. But I think there are different variables there that we probably can never give a fully accurate answer as to why.
It's a great answer. Because I think that's a fair answer. And I guess the follow-ups that we won't know until we know is you know, where is that leash? Because although, as people said, Mascherano has his favorites, all coaches have their favorites. That's just part of coaching. That's part of you put in the people you believe in. And that's like, that. You
like
know,
they, Gressel. Like people always wondered why the heck Gressel got so much playing time. And because he was reliable and Tata liked what he saw and nobody was going to change that.
That's all coaches, you know, I'd say you'd see on the biggest scale, like a Pep Guardiola, people would say, you know, Jack Grealish was not a favorite player or whatever, but a lot of other teams would kill for him, right? You know, sometimes it's just your relationship and how the coach thinks you fit and what value you bring. So the leash, we'll just have to wait and see what that looks like. If any, you know, I hope Allende turns around because he is a great player. But to your point, it's all we can always talk about what ifs. But if Inter Miami lose or things happen that you go back and say Allende missed or this didn't happen, you start to say like, well, why didn't Fafa come in then? Right? Like that's a future state thing. Yeah. I think we all agree though is that we'd like to see him get more minutes in the second half. If I think it's a very fair and valid point to say Allende is your starter. We have this system. We have these roles. This is the balance of the team. This is the first team that gets the reps during practice, etc. But in the second half, when depending on how a game is playing out, I think Fafa deserves to have chances in the 60th to 70th minute to come in and make a difference. I think he's gotten much lower in the pecking order. That is probably deserved. But we'll see. I think very fair points, and a lot of people in the comments, you know, I think feel the same about all of those issues. Another thing that I think is for tomorrow specifically, let's talk about what we do think the lineups will be now, knowing all of these mitigating factors and circumstances. I think Black Stories, here's one, you know, DePaul, Boosie, Bright, Telesco would be your ideal four. I assume in that situation it's a 4-4-2 and you're removing Allende, or it's a 3-4-2-1 kind of deal. You know, I think that'd be like great case scenario if our attack was producing at a really high level. That's then you'd be able to try something like this. But because they're not, you can't do it, right? Not yet. So what do we think is tomorrow's best available team to secure a win against Pumas?
I think
tomorrow you can't choose Lionel Messi.
Wait, what was the? Say that again.
Hint: you can't choose Lionel Messi.
No, say that what you said before.
What team do I think will be to beat Pumas?
Yeah. So, in regards to that, and sorry, I was reading a note that I wanted to make sure I didn't forget that I wanted to bring up. That's why I lost track of that. So what I wanted to say basically for tomorrow, I think there's some key things we want to know about tomorrow's match. So number one being that both sides are missing their star. Inter Miami is missing Messi. And then Pumas is missing their goalie, Keylor Navas, number one. Yep. Keylor Navas received a red card in additional time against their game. So they're missing both their stars. So it's going to be interesting how both one is obviously a 10, one is a goalkeeper, but they're both fundamental to the way that those teams operate and the way they play, and they're the leaders of their team. So it's going to be interesting how both teams adapt. Number two, contrasting styles. Inter Miami, a team that we know that is not a fast-moving team, likes to play with possession, likes to hold the ball, pass, until they can find a space to they're not going to force anything. Sometimes when Messi is not playing, we've seen that there are players that step up and there's a little bit of a change of style, and that'll be interesting. Where we've seen, if Aviles, for example, plays, he's a guy that'll break a line and then put in a through pass. We've seen Busquets put through passes, so we tend to see a lot more of those types of passes when Messi doesn't play. We'll have to see that if that kind of shows itself tomorrow. And then the other, I think, contrasting style of play is Pumas. Pumas plays a lot more aggressive, a lot more of a physical game. And they've got a really tall forward, 6'3", Guillermo Martinez. So that's going to be interesting to see how Inter Miami's defense kind of is able to handle that. We know that we've got some short defenders and we've got a really short tall gang, forward on their side. You know, we have Maxi Falcón that I think is like 5'10".
Either but plays like he's 6'9", honestly,
Part
of a lion.
Yeah, Guillermo Martinez is 6'3", but then you have Aviles, I think, is like 6'2", or Luján is 6 foot. So those guys are going to be there. But it's two contrasting styles on attack, and I think that that'll be interesting to see. Tomorrow, Inter Miami is going to depend huge on Rodrigo De Paul. On the opposite side, Pumas is going to depend fully on Carrasquilla and Paul Vite, who are their two center midfielders. So it'll be interesting to see how Busquets and how Redondo and the guys that play more the central role, including the ball probably that'll be floating, how those will match up. But I really think that if Inter Miami is going to pull this off, I think that they're going to have to be very responsible with the ball. We've seen them suffer, right? When they lose the ball in the attack and they get counterattacked, this team is fast and they're quick and they're not going to forgive them for those types of plays. So they need to make sure that they're on top of their game. And then on the attack, Keylor Navas is not in the goal. Yeah, they have a 17-year-old kid that's not going to be in the goal for Pumas.
So shoot.
You have Velasco Segovia that has scored 4 goals in his last 4 games that we see can shoot from outside the box. You need Suarez, who can shoot outside the box even though he hasn't scored. You need these guys to really put pressure early on and start shooting on this kid. 17 years old. It's not ideal for him. He's stepping into a winner-go-home game, basically. So I think that it'll be an interesting contrast between both teams. And I think that Inter Miami has what they need to win without Messi. They're just going to have to be very disciplined and be very not afraid to attack. Sometimes this team can look a little stagnant. So
make more of their chances.
Yeah.
I think what we should do, what I think would be cool to do is let's just do it by each phase to say who we think will be playing and how that means to the formation. But really quickly, and I hate to put in a bit of a sour note, but I wanted to take a second to acknowledge and give condolences to David Ruiz, obviously, from our academy, a young Honduras player from Honduras whose father passed away yesterday. And just, you know, sending condolences and prayers. Seems like a great kid. Has made his way through the academy. I've been to multiple games I've seen his whole family, and they are wearing his jersey, you know. So sending our condolences really quick to the Inter Miami community as a whole, and hope he can bounce back. With that, let's now kind of go through how we see this team looking and how that, you know, leads to a win. So starting with defense, do we all agree it's going to be a back four? And I didn't say who in it yet, but do we all agree it's going to be a back four?
Yeah. I don't think we're doing anything different.
Okay, so with that, starting at left back, Jordi Alba. I think we all can agree.
Yep.
Starting at right back, because of the Frey injury and everything, I think Chelo, we all agree, is going to be those are the, even though we all wish, I would say, you know, it could be Frey. He's not ready. So Chelo, we all agree, will probably be the right back. Yes?
Yes, the immovable Chelo, yes.
All right, so now center backs. This is where it's interesting, because we've obviously, now you have Maxi Falcón back in the equation, where yesterday he wasn't. I think he's a guaranteed starter. Noah Allen has just gotten back from injury. Played for, I think, 60 minutes on Saturday, and had locked in his position as left center back, you know, beforehand, but got injured and was out for a while. And we've seen a good amount of play from both Aviles and Luján, who recently has come back, but, you know, who have played more in the last few, in the last amount of matches than Noah Allen. So really, who do we think is going to be the center back pairing based on all of those variables?
What do you think?
I think it's going to be it should be the same. Now that we know that Maxi Falcón is no longer suspended, he should keep his spot. And I thought Noah did fine for the, what was it, 60-70 mm-hmm. minutes that he played. Toto Aviles would be honestly not a bad shout in that spot. Because
you get the height and you get some playmaking that you're going to need from a no Messi. Yeah.
I've been liking Toto Aviles recently. Mm-hmm. So.
And then lastly, Gonzalo Luján.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, no, don't get me started on Luján. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Toto and Maxi Falcón back pairing in the back. No, I love Noah Allen, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Toto and Maxi.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Gian?
Yeah, well, it's not Noah Allen. You can't have a 4-foot defender versus a 6-foot-3 forward. So I don't think it's going to be Noah. I honestly, like, if it's apples to apples, who's a better defender? Who's better at being also playing the long ball out and passing, I would say Aviles. The only thing is Macherano is going to have to outweigh
the discipline,
risk in that, especially facing a Pumas team that, like I mentioned, is very aggressive on attack and is going to have guys that are going to be, they're going to be hustling and tussling. And I don't know if you're ready to risk that with Aviles. So just because of that, I think that he's going to go for Luján.
Really? Really?
I think he's going for Luján because of just merely because of that. And then also to offer a different opinion than Matt, just to stay on the whole scheme of disagreeing with everybody. So,
well, but I think what to your point though, it is fair. I think in most situations there are favorites and there are big discrepancies between players. You know, especially mm-hmm. once you get to this point of the season, you know who you expect, etc. But I do think for tomorrow in particular, I think that there is honestly a 33% chance for either Luján, Allen, or Aviles to have that position. From a fan, as someone who doesn't have any knowledge on, you know, what's going to happen, everyone has their preferences. But I can see a situation for Mascherano where he sees a certain value add in each of those players. And what does he think is most important? Is it, you know, Allen, who's had, I'd say, probably the most amount of consistency and defensive backing, but now you don't have Messi. So now you're like, well, would you rather have Aviles, who has shown he can break lines, good on set pieces, can maybe create some of the attack that you're missing, but then you risk the yellow card and you risk, obviously, a disciplinary issue that would hurt the team. And then lastly, Lujan, who has played recently, I think has played at a very fine, fair level. You know, if this was a different situation or circumstance, if you're seeing rotation, I'd say, you know, Lujan playing makes sense. So it makes this really interesting, right? There's not a clear favorite, I don't think, when you put it all together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think that something to keep in mind also is that we do suffer from the set piece, and our short kings in the back line sometimes, you know, can suffer with that. So a little bit of height helps. So.
Yeah. But you would choose Lujan over Aviles.
Simply because of the risk factor. You already went down a man in minute seven last game. You don't want that. You don't want to risk that. And then, but skill wise, I like Aviles more, just risk factor.
I wonder, I will say in last match, you know, and we thought the three subs at the 60th minute, because he only had one window left, was Kremaski, Bright, and Fafa. But then he switched Fafa and Aviles. And so does that show that maybe he believes more in the discipline in the season? Aviles hasn't been a yellow card yet. Yeah, I mean, I think it was the first few games where he had some egregious things, but I agreed, he's definitely mellowed. But this is a different stakes game than normal, right? This is not a normal regular midweek MLS match. This is win and continue. And you want to say a tournament's valuable or not? I don't know. What I will say is, and I do believe this, Messi wants to win this tournament. Inter Miami want to win this tournament. I think the Liga MX, the big teams, the ones like the Club Americas, etc., Tigres, they want to win. And with that, there's going to be a level of intensity. So I think this is one of the first times where I think I'm genuinely going to say that three of the four pretty locked in, but it's going to be a coin toss to see who that last central defender is.
Guys, you cannot ask for Aviles to be over Falcón. That doesn't make sense.
I don't agree with that.
The amount of times that he found himself in the right position, even for goal line saves, like his IQ is higher than anybody else's IQ, than maybe Alba in that back line. Like, there, yes, he's not the fastest, you know, but the IQ.
Guardiola.
Like,
great name.
I don't know. I disagree with you guys, Tony, and I think Blackstore. You guys are kind of.
But I think the point, though, in their opinion, probably, though, is that Aviles is worth the risk in this situation. They think it has more value than.
Yeah, but not over Falcón. I wouldn't agree.
Not over Falcón. No, Falcón has been, I would say, outside of Messi, the best player of the season for Inter Miami thus far. If I was giving, if you were like MVP of the team today, obviously Messi is one. I don't think Falcón is far from being two with what he's done this season.
The ball goes through Falcón's hair. That doesn't mean he's bending over. his hair takes up like a foot, so it may look like it, but it's not him bending over.
We'll see. So on that, I will say, make sure you are following us tomorrow, especially because we will know at every moment, every breaking moment of the lineup and what Mascherano ends up doing. Because as we go through midfield and attack right now and finish up this episode, because we're already over an hour, there are a lot of options for everywhere. Ones we agree with, ones we disagree with, but all that have some probability to them. So follow us on X at Messi & Co. We will be providing the news as we get it, as it relates to the lineup. So I'm going to keep that on because we want everyone to join the fam. Okay, so midfield. One, how many players are in it? Is it four or is it three? And then who are those players? I'd like to start with Matt on this one because I think it's going to be a good way for us to start the conversation.
Sure. I think it'll be the same. I think it'll be Segovia and then Ashende. And then the midfield is going to be Redondo with Busi.
In the midfield. Okay. And so the two up top you're saying would be Suarez and
De Paul.
Okay. That's interesting. Gian?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, what am I supposed to say now?
Like, oh, that's
you have to disagree with me. You have to disagree.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
You have to disagree. No,
I didn't want to
say, sorry, say the four again. I think I did say the four again for me.
He said so. It's well, go ahead, man.
It was Segovia and Nashende on the wings, and then Busi and Redondo as the double pivot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I think it's, for me, it's similar. I'm trying to figure out a way to make it different, but it's I feel like it's similar. It's going to have in the midfield, yeah, the double pivot there with Busi and with Redondo. For me, I guess, yeah, it'll be Allende and a free floating Rodrigo de Paul as the 10, just wherever he needs to be. He's sometimes on the left, sometimes on the right, sometimes. Sometimes, you know, attacking. We saw him do that last game where he had at I think it was the first goal where he was basically an attacker. He headed the ball into Telasco. It was him and Telasco up front.
Right.
And I think you'll see.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of Telasco moving up as well when he.
Yeah, he's played. He's played that way in the past. We've seen it, especially when Messi wouldn't be there.
Right. Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised seeing Telasco play in that manner again.
Agreed. Agreed. So here would be my, I think all those, the personnel-wise, I think all but one, which I'm going to give my opinion on, is going to be what the personnel is. I think how specifically Allende, Telasco, and DePaul divide and conquer the attack and how they manage to balance it, provide to Suarez, but not give up the midfield, like how the three of them are going to balance that, I think is going to be, you know, just something that's going to happen in the game, and that will be part of the game plan. We won't know until it starts. In my opinion, I would start Bright over Redondo. I think this is going to be one of your only opportunities to have either Bright or Redondo start in a normal team if you had Messi, because obviously the priority, like, it's Busquets, DePaul, and Segovia. Like, I don't see that changing if you're having as your main ones. Then obviously you have your Allende technically as your fourth midfielder, but mainly attacker. I think knowing that this is one of the rare situations that it's gonna have it, I think Yannick Bright is miles ahead of Redondo, and I think even in this, you know, the situation we're in, I think a Busquets Bright double pivot would be marvelous, because I think that allows specifically Segovia to be able to play higher, and Bright will make more right decisions than wrong decisions, and will do his job at covering a lot of space as it gets to the defensive end. So in my perfect world, I would rather be Bright. I think you guys are probably right. It will be Redondo because Bright is just coming back from injury. But it's just really a shame because I think he's so good. And, you know, his opportunities are going to be rare based on the personnel of this team. So that's my only, I guess, you know, opinion. Different. That's different.
Yeah, it's pretty close to what we all think is going to be the only just differentiator. There's that one player in. And it's not to say he doesn't deserve it. I think that he does. But again, once Mascherano feels safe with the one specific
player. What we want, what we think, what will happen, they're always different, right? They all can be different things.
Yeah, and I love Bright. I think he's very solid. I think he's a great, great player. But I think we've always seen the Redondo, I don't want to say bias, but like kind of bias.
Over, he's the first choice when it comes to that personnel option. I think you'll see Kremaski early, though, by the way. I think, depending on the score, you'll see Fafa, too, if we have to score. Like, if we have to, like, it's no longer, it's a mm-hmm. must-win game. And you can win on penalties, but then you have to depend on other circumstances to advance. Like, mm-hmm. if you need to score, you'll see Fafa come in, I think, quicker than in any other circumstance.
Who's the captain tomorrow?
Great question. I think
who's captain?
Busi?
Busquets. Oh yeah, Busquets. Yeah, Busquets is the captain. I forgot.
Because
they gave it
a bank out.
He came out. He is when it went to Cremas. Yeah. If it wasn't Busquets, I think it would be Noah Allen, probably. But if Noah Allen isn't your starting center back, then I think maybe
Hello Wayne Gunn. No.
No, probably maybe Jordy. But it that's so I think our biggest to kind of summarize the we're aligned on what we think is gonna happen. I think also we'll give our score predictions, but we hope Miami win and advance and have a good and do the best with what we have. We have a world class player in Rodrigo de Paul that 2 weeks ago we'd be looking a lot more down on this game, knowing we don't have Messi, than we are now because we have a world class player in Rodrigo de Paul. Who ends up being the center back pairing with Falcón will be interesting, and who gets that fourth midfield double pivot role I think will be interesting. But we'll see. It's going to be a hell of a game, and I'm excited for it. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. When it's either... I don't want to say win or go home.
It's close.
Need a win tomorrow. So I'm really hoping for that win. I would much rather take a win over a draw and then kind of hope for the other results.
Then put things in other people's hands, right?
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure it's a win or go home. Like as close as it is without statistically being a win or go home. So
right. It depends on some results today.
Easier for us.
On some MLS results today, like 2 points could be enough. But definitely not guaranteed.
I don't know if 2 points are going to be enough. 2 points you're talking about.
Because how many have to lose? Like,
dude, if you have 7 points at the end of this, so if you get the 2 points, you have 13 or 14 other teams that you need them to like tie and not win. Like that's
to lose, tie, or only get two. So there's three alternatives.
You have to remember we have one goal difference. We have one goal.
I agree. Winner goal home is the mentality, but there is also I'd say it's like 90-10. Like it's not.
There's
like
a higher chance of me going and playing the Powerball and winning $1 million tomorrow than Inter Miami
getting two points
in passing. So
I totally disagree with that.
I'll get the ticket.
You think they have a 1 in 300 million, or what is it? How many? What's the population of Miami? 3.8 million. You think it's a 1 in 3.8 million chance?
Do you think that Miami is going to pass with only scoring getting 2 points?
No, but I think it's. I need you
to root for me winning the lottery over Inter Miami passing with 2 points because it's honestly more. Chat, what's more realistic, please?
Only if I get a cut. No, but all I'm saying is, you know, there even if it's a 2% chance, 3% chance, the way the tournament is set up, there's a lot of wild cards. But mainly and fully agree, the number one goal is to win and advance so that there's nothing that can stand between you and becoming a quarterfinalist. No other factors matter. If you win, it's done. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, and to wrap up what's been a really great show with a ton of great comments, great topics, great opinions, what are our score predictions?
I'd say, I think we're going to get another RDP assist. I want Suarez to score so bad. I really want Suarez.
Don't we all?
But like, I think it'll just be a long time. I know, but I want him to score so bad. I think we're going to win. I think we're going to win
3-1.
3-1. Oh yeah.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
That'd be lovely.
Oh yeah. No, I think we're going to lock in tomorrow.
Hell yeah, brother.
Tomorrow, I want to see the Paul score. So I think I'd like to see the Paul score, Allende score, Suarez score, Telasco. If he wants to, he can continue this amazing streak of goal scoring. But for me, I want 3 goals. Suarez, Allende, and the Paul, those are the guys that need to score. So I think it'll be 3-1 for us tomorrow.
I'm going to, honest to God, not know what Puma's going to score because I really don't know enough about them and how they play and what it is. I don't know if they would get 0, 1, or 2, but I will agree with you. And this may be a first time. I think it's going to be 3 goals, and I think it's going to be those 3 players. And so that let's hope.
We got a bunch of copycats here, guys. I thought you were supposed to disagree.
Well, wait a second.
We were supposed to disagree. You were supposed to be like, no, Matt, we're going to win.
How about no. Ash? Great name, by the way. No. Suarez, super hat trick. Perfect. That too. I'm happy with that as well. But we'll see. And as always, make sure you're following us so that you're with it to see every moment of that match, because we will all be watching with bated breath. But for this, what I think was really fun, engaging live preview for Messi and Co. I am Ashley. That is Gian. That is Matt. And we will see you guys next time.
See you guys.
Hasta luego.